You're listening to the Slow Ride Podcast. Bikes, advice, and rumors straight from the source. TheSlowRidePodcast.com and on Twitter at TheSlowRidePod. Enjoy the ride.
Hello and welcome to episode 478 of the Slow Ride Podcast. This is Tim in Orlando, Florida.
Hey, this is Matt wearing shoes in the house in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And this is Spencer in the city, beautiful Holyoke, Massachusetts. Guys, another wonderful ronde around the sun, and we are back again for the ronde of Vlaanderen.
Yeah,
and, the holy of the holies.
The holiest of weeks, starting today. Eddie Merckx rose from the grave and demolished the Flanders Paris-Roubaix double for the first time in 1947.
And he treated Remco. The big day here was Matthew Vanderpoel wearing the black shorts takes the easy victory in the men's race by a minute over Luca Mazzotto and Nils Pollitt. In second with American Magnus Sheffield in sixth place. Tom Skuins continues an amazing spring run of a top 10 at Flanders. So shout out to Tom Skuins, friend of the podcast.
Yes.
Overall, a fantastic muddy Flanders overall, on the men's side.
Overall, exactly pretty much the top 10 we all predicted.
No.
I would say.
Yeah. Not at all. Maybe a little bit. But yeah, kind of a weird one there.
Kind of a weird one. That's putting it lightly, I would say, little guy.
I think to even discuss how weird the race ended up being, we have to talk about the fact that we got to roll it back to midweek where Wout Pedersen.
We're going to talk about Tours.
Well, yeah, and Stuyven, Guillaume all crashed hard midweek. And So obviously Wout was out. That changes the race. Pedersen was banged up, so that changes the tactics for sure.
Because still goes on the attack.
He's I think he wouldn't have done what he did today. Like he wouldn't have ridden. Trek wouldn't have ridden this style of race if they had showed up with full strength Pedersen, full strength Stuyven, and full strength Toms. It would have been a very different race from them tactically. Like with them having Pedersen go off so early, like he was banged up. I feel like he was doing that for Toms. But like if they would have come in with those three, like Stuyven was riding super well too. Like he was not really getting talked up the way he should have, but he was on good form. Like they were the powerhouse team, except for now if you look at paper, UAE's the powerhouse team somehow, maybe. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but
UAE is the powerhouse team with the third, fourth, fifth sweep. The wide angle sweep,
yep,
of the podium, all the not so important spots,
which
is pretty impressive nonetheless from a team we really don't even expect to see at Flanders. I kind of forget they're there.
Well, like I think it's mid last year, like thinking them having Wellens coming over and Pollitt coming over,
sure, yeah.
Like. You thought like, okay, they're boosting the classic strength, but maybe they're just boosting the strength on the flat stages for Toddy. But
They
obviously, I mean, I think a little golf clap for them. They put together a hell of a classic season from a team that we didn't think would do that. With guys who thought were maybe over the hill, I would have said.
And, little guy, you're still blazing ahead here, and I'm still trying to reel it back.
I'm excited.
I'm trying to reel it back to Dwarves.
Dwarves.
Where we did have... The big crash takes Wout out. That's like the news of the week, right? Like the showdown we all expected
Vanderpoel,
who is going to win, and Wout, who is going to get second, was off the table. So second place, totally up in the air now.
But Jorgensen
could be anybody's game.
Totally.
Yes.
But Jorgensen trying to make the go to fill Wout's shoes. Pretty awesome.
Well, yeah. And that's the point I was just about to make is you take Wout out of the jumbo equation, right? And you're like, oh no, well, they're still such a powerhouse that they half their team hits the ground, they lose their superstar and they still win Dwarves because of course they did. And you just go into Flanders being like, okay, well, next man up kind of mentality for them. And Jorgensen's going to, take that coveted second place spot at any race that that Vanderpool's in.
So
it didn't play out.
Vanderpool's third win. The margin of victory in over a minute, you'd have to go back, 13 years to Cancellara to doing that?
I don't know.
Pretty awesome.
You know what his record is in this race, right? Have you seen this?
Oh, I haven't for a bit, but it's got to be like 1-2-4-4-1-2-1-1 or something. I don't know, something like that.
Fourth, first, second, first, second, first. That's his. That's
damn.
The worst he's ever done in this race is fourth.
Yeah.
As my son would say, that's a pattern.
Yeah.
There's something. It's something.
Well, so next year's Wout's year. All right, that's something to hope for.
Wasn't it about that time where he got fourth when Neil Rogers asked Peter Sagan if he knew who Matthew Van Der Poel was, and he was like, no.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
I was going to bring, do you think now Peter Sagan knows who Matthew Van Der Poel is after winning three Flanders? How many did Peter Sagan win? Not three.
One. I think he just won one. Yeah. And in the rainbow stripes, though, give him that. But Van Der Poel, obviously, the rainbow.
Now, little guy, still talking about the men's race here. We'll talk about the women's race momentarily.
Totally.
In the men's race, who is the MVP, MVDP of the race?
Yeah. So your MVDP, MVP is obviously Johnny Vermeersch, who went off with Pedersen early. And the commentators were kind of a little confused. Folks, they were kind of like, why is he working? Why is he working with Pedersen? But I think that was perfect because it put a little pressure on other teams to work. And it kind of psyched people out. You could have sent him up and had him just sit there. But having him work with Pedersen made Pedersen, one, overcommit a little bit, which I think he was going to do anyway. But it made other teams get a little bit nervous because you got two world champs up there, people. You got your gravel world champ, your former gravel world champ, and
can't
you got a former road world champ. And, you don't want to let a gravel world champ up the road. They're going to go up to Koppenberg. Obviously, cyclocross skills eventually came into play on the Koppenberg, where pretty much everyone who's never been good at cross fell down or slipped or looked like a bunch of cat fours trying to lift their butts off the seat in the wet. And Vanderpool just made it look easy. Like, he's been up that in worse. He's like, I've been up this in muddier.
Yeah.
No big deal.
It's no big deal. It was, to put it lightly, it was a bit of a clown show.
Oh, it was.
On the Koppenberg. I haven't seen so many dudes in cycling shoes running road shoes since Chris Froome so famously did it in the Tour de France. Tim, you're the runner on the podcast. How was the form looking when you choose to run? You know, do you do it in cycling shoes up cobbled slippery hills?
As the resident expert, I do try to run with my heels, where the heels strike first before everything else. I was thinking about this running experiment that they were doing and thinking of our dearly departed Paul Sherwin, who would no doubt in the World Cycling Productions video be talking about how back in the day they would put leather on the bottom of their cleats so they wouldn't be slipping when they ran up. They would have been prepared. And I was lost.
Yep.
Lost without that guiding me today.
You know, he didn't need it, but I'm willing to bet Van Der Poel had a little bit of leather going to the bottom of his shoes.
He might have.
He just seems like that kind of guy.
Prepared. It
was great
overall.
Go ahead.
Overall, I thought the race was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. Little guy, I do have a question for you. Do you think Michael Matthews is the worst rider in the world, or do you think untreated fairly there? I don't like that he was relegated.
Oh, come on, man. He swept across the road and watch the sprint again. He's, I feel bad for the guy. Like, obviously he wanted it, but like that was a pretty big sweep, and he had Paulette right on his side when he did it the whole time, and like I don't know how they could not relegate him after that big old sweep.
Just episodes ago, mere episodes ago at Milan Sanremo, we were giving Matthews the kudos of a clean sprint and how he didn't deviate at all. And it was just
opened the door.
A display of what it should be.
He wasn't going to do that again.
It is wild.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a different race. This is a harder race. He didn't have his head about him in the same way. You know, he was like pretty gassed at the end there. I was excited for a second, though. I mean, I was glad he got on the podium for a second. But
my next question for you, little guy, you're the fashionista of the podcast. I think people look at you as the bellwether of fashion. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about the black and white EF kit with the fluorescent as a harken back to the old days, the glory days, release of the black and white photo? Mouths agape. They were like, oh, this is back to the old days. Then you see it in person, it's got fluorescent pink helmets with it. I'm imagining that was the color of the professional Peloton back in the 70s.
Well,
curious your thought on the black and white.
Yeah, it's a little mash 'em up. It was like mashing the 80s and the 60s together or something. It was a fine kit, but man, I already like it. I like their kit, their regular kit, the most. So I feel like there were some uglier teams that could have switched out for the weekend, and I would have enjoyed that more. Arkea, that got second. Not a kit I ever think about until Mazatos jumped onto the podium. So, you know, I don't know. Spencer, what'd you think?
I love the kit. I thought it was great. I like that that teams are dropping special kits, usually for the tour, but I'll take Flanders. That's fine. I don't know. I'm of two minds because I like the fun surprise of a new kit, but I almost always like the alternate kit better than the regular kit. And I'm like, if you had this in the back pocket the whole time, why isn't this just the regular kit? Like, this EF kit is better
than
their current kit.
Because they want you to buy the limited edition kit naturally. But I'm with you, Spencer. I liked the black and white kit. I wish that they would have went with like an all black helmet and not done the pink helmet. I wish that they would have gotten everybody on board with like the monochromatic. Maybe bring back a hairnet or two.
Good luck with that.
But here's the next question. And Spencer, I'll start this one for you.
Okay.
Little guy was talking a little bit about the American success. Obviously, Jorgensen. Magnus Sheffield in sixth place. And he mentioned Riley Sheehan of the Denver Disruptors. Oh, do you think Sheehan is missing the National Criterium League race maybe in Miami Beach last year? I think they did Road America in Atlanta in front of 100 fans. Or do you think he preferred racing Tour de Flanders? Like, do you think that this was an eye-opening experience and now his choice has been made? He's like, you know what? I like it over here better.
You know, the weather in Miami is arguably a little bit nicer, so I wouldn't hold it against him. But I have a feeling, you know, this was probably a little bit better experience, and obviously finishing up in the front end, the pointy end of the race there, officially finishing 13th. Not too shabby for just a guy who was riding around in circles not that long ago. You'll love to see it.
It's his second classic. Only, you know, that he's ever ridden. It's impressive.
I mean, that's pretty good.
Only a second classic in 13th place. Not too bad.
It's only not impressive because Vanderpoel's first Flanders was fourth place.
And
he has never done worse since.
Don't move on yet. One thing you spoke of the Americans, and mm-hmm. I think we have to admit Jorgensen tried to go big. He tried to go with Vanderpoel.
Yeah,
he was the red hot favorite for second.
Yeah. He paid for it, and like now we're talking about him being the American with the third best result, and that
yeah.
My hope is that this doesn't discourage people from trying to challenge Vanderpool, which seems to be a pointless thing to do because you ended up with Mazzata, which I will mention, have something else to say about, and Pollitt on the podium, two guys that like Bettiol and Toons tried to go big to get away, and like, yeah, anyway, just like, we're in that position where you pay for your effort to try, which is kind of a bummer. But the other thing I want to say about Mazzata from Arkea, who got second on the podium, all this talk about Wout and Vanderpool like doing altitude camps and just training, you know, and not racing a ton this year to get these huge results. I'm looking at his races so far this year. This guy has run a classic like 1970s Belgian program. Like, he has been racing almost once a week, like since Umloop. Like, he started in the south of, like, in Spain, then went to the south of France, did opening weekend, and then he's only done Belgian races since then. Like, they've just been sticking him in one hard man race from another. He's got a win, he's got some good results, but like, there's no altitude camp, there's no time to go to the south of Spain and enjoy the sun on this man's program. Just, this is, this Eddie Merckx should be like shaking this man's hand right now, because this is the sort of like old man, like, look at this guy, he's just been drinking beer and eating fries and bathing in mud. Anyway,
yeah, you love to see it.
Do you?
Maybe. I do want to let's flip scripts just a little bit to the women's race. I want to give a quick shout out to Little Trek, who just flawless execution to the point that Shirin Van Anroy, friend of the podcast,
friend of the pod for sure,
celebrating the win that she produced by the awesome lead out to Longo Borghini over Niwadama of Canyon Tram Racing. So pretty cool to see a 1-3 finish for Trek with Canyon Tram in the middle. Marianne Vos missing out, although perfectly placed on the last time up the Koppenberg. And then Lotta Kopecky, world champ, full white skin suit, having to run up the climb. It looked miserable out there. But
it was a great
Borghini for Italy taking the win. Awesome, 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 awesome racing on the women's side. Who would have thought that it was just, if not more exciting than the men's race?
It was a great race. It was a little weird to see Kopecky on the back foot so much, especially when she was walking, like you said, with the cleats. Because I think everyone expects her to be better, but you're right. Trek, perfect teamwork. Once I saw them get away with Niedoma, I felt bad for Niedoma because I was like, you can do whatever, you can sit on, you can do whatever, but like, it's game over. And like, when it was clear those three were going to the finish, you're just like, there's no way. It's another podium for Niedoma. She's not getting the big win.
It's a tough ask. Yeah. It's a tough ask.
But you know, what are you going to do? Like,
Niedoma is probably my favorite women cyclist in the peloton. Because I am always a fan of the perennial second place, like Roger de Vlaeminck, Mr. Second Place. Cassie Niedoma is that rider in the women's peloton. She is always there. She's always killing it. She's always doing the work. She's always on the podium, but rarely getting the wins. And, I appreciate the work that she puts in day in and day out, race in and race out, to always almost be there. And I don't mean that to be disparaging at all. She's incredible for being up there as often as she is. But yeah, no hope. No hope in this one, little guy. You are correct.
So with Niedoma's contract is up at the end of this year, and Vollering is leaving SD Works. I think she's been with Canyon SLRAM for a long time, but like, she should sign with SD Works and 1-2 it with Kopecky, because Niedoma's problem is she's always alone. Like, she's she's up there with two track riders, but even if not, like, you look down the list, at the end of these big classics, she doesn't have someone to play off of. And she's like always stuck between two SD Works riders, two DSM riders, two Trek riders. And then she's just like the one. And she's just as strong as those other riders, but she's going to end up forever in this position. I don't know. Like, she should fill the Valery in space. They should flip flop. Let Valery ride alone.
Interesting. I like that idea. That's interesting.
I do. The attack that Van Anroy had coming across the gap and then going into what the final climb, like 15 seconds up or whatever, was pretty awesome. It was a great teamwork type thing. Something that you guys experienced racing with me all those years ago. Blowing past the group, making others chase.
Well, that was what when I first saw her racing, I was like, it's like a young Tim Hayes out there, you know, just like I mean, you know, like peak Tim. Well, you know, maybe not quite this fast, but like I was like, man, just like tactically everything, like she kind of embodies what you brought to bike racing.
Exactly.
I just loaded her results list. She is
actually now she is somebody else.
Whoa, I'm sorry. No. Well, it's crazy. She's only 22. She's 22. Her results sheet is out of this world.
Yeah.
Anyway,
only 22 and only racing so much road, right? Like, just came to the road what 2 years ago?
Yeah. It's true. I mean, again, so, cyclocross. Not a breeding ground for winners, right?
As we do with all six monuments and grand tours, I always like to ask you both how we rate this one in the pantheon of events. One being the worst, don't ever want to watch this race ever again. 10 being an all-timer, one of the most memorable that we've ever had, kind of like when Hincapie's stem broke at Roubaix. Where do you guys rate this one, 1 to 10? And does this leave you feeling even better going into Roubaix, where we have a possible Matthew Vanderpool double on the line?
Oof, yeah. I'm going to give them both. I'm going to give the men's and the women's both like 9 out of 10s. I think.
Whoa.
I think it's, and maybe it's because we got the walking on the Koppenberg, which adds something. Both races were exciting, had a lot of attacks. But sometimes you get
a little bit of rain,
but sometimes you get like you get a good men's race, maybe less, you know, like one of the races isn't as good. Both of these races were like solidly amazing races. And even though, yeah, like the men's side, you felt like Vanderpool's race to lose, there's a lot of excitement and they play off each other. Like being able to watch one of these and then flip over and watch the rest of the other one is just. It doesn't get much better than that. So,
all right, I don't feel like we've had a lot of nines on this podcast. Okay, I'm impressed with your score. I feel like usually races are sitting in the 7 to 8.5 max kind of range. So it is interesting to see you giving them both nines. And what's even more interesting is I'm going to give the men's race a 9 as well.
All right.
I love the weather. I love the rain. I love the slickness. I love the running up the copper, but all the things you just said. I love the controversy at the finish. The relegations. Like, it's everything you could want. So I'm going to give it a 9. I'm going to give the women's race a 9.5. I thought it was a little more exciting with the actual kind of sprint finish, you know.
True.
For the top spot rather than the top when Vanderpool is racing spot. But yeah, two great races. Love to see it. Bodes well for next week where Vanderpool definitely cannot win. He will not do two in a row. So that's my prediction.
So I like both of you coming with the 9s. I would agree, both 9s on the men's and women's side.
I'm sorry, I gave it a 9.5 on the women's side, Tim.
Yeah, that's true. Overall, though, it looked fantastic. What was also great here, Tom Skunes represented the Slow Ride Podcast Championship belt into perfection with that 10th place finish. Kopecky, fantastic in the, again, resplendent in the white skin suit at Flanders in the muddy conditions. Awesome to see. I thought overall it was a fantastic race. The only thing that docks it down on the men's side, then on the women's side, the celebration of Van Anroy with Borghini to take the win was fantastic. I don't like the bike over the head crossing the finish line thing. That's a knockdown for me. Vanderpool also not in the all white skin suit. Also massive disappointment. You're the world champ. Go full white.
It's a rainy day. Nobody needs this. No,
you know, it's a power move. Also,
it's something.
I was looking back in the Sorry Podcast Championship belt to see if we've ever given the championship belt to a non-person. You know, like I was going to maybe nominate Michael Matthews' sprint line because the deviation of the line to get the belt.
Yeah, special.
And it just, I just don't think we could take it away from Skunes there. So overall, fantastic Tour de Flanders. Wonderful to see. So let's get right into this week's Preem Lap. We'll kick it over to our correspondent. Of course, I'm talking about first time Slow Ride Podcast Championship belt winner, Peter Sagan, to see if he can find Matthew Vanderpool in the post win scrum.
From Last Track Lions, and I don't listen to the podcast.
All right, guys, here we are in the Preem Lap. Let's give a quick shout out to all the listeners and supporters of the Slow Ride Podcast and Wide Angle Podium Network. Head over to wideanglepodium.com to find the bevy of shows. Right now, in season, the Grodeo is continuing to push out 1 to 2 episodes per week as we reach peak gravel cycling season. More and more races around the corner. The Lifetime Grand Prix is starting up soon with the first race at Sea Otter in about 2 weeks. You also had Mid-South about 2 weeks ago. So check out the Grodeo. That is the Slow Ride Podcast recommendation on the Wide Angle Podium Network this week. Head over to wideanglepodium.com or search Grodeo wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to reiterate what you said leading in there. Special thanks and shout out to all the Slow Ride Podcast supporters who are dedicated listeners and who kick us a few bucks every month to keep doing this podcast. We very much appreciate it, and it does keep the lights on around here. So thanks for that. We used to do bonus content for those folks, and we don't anymore. We haven't for a long time. Maybe we should think about doing that again, boys.
We should probably do that again.
We should probably get to throw him a bone. Maybe we'll do something fun here coming up. So if you're not already, jump on that train, and we'll try and get something cool for you out of the gate. But otherwise, yeah, check out the other shows on Wide Angle Podium Network, Cyclocross Radio, Grodeo, all the others, Criterium Nation, all fantastic shows. Cater to your cycling needs.
So let's get back to the pod and this week's mailbag.
What up? This is Tom Skoyinch, and you're listening to the Slow Ride Podcast.
Okay, guys, here we are. We're back to the Slow Ride Podcast email bag overflowing this week. Hit us up at theslowridepodcast@gmail.com where all of your emails are gratefully received. Before we go into the emails this week, I do want to give a shout out because I was listening to my favorite press podcast called The Press Box, which is where I get the emails are always gratefully received line. It's my favorite pod.
Oh, okay.
And well-known cycling journalist Jason Gay was on there. And in particular, Jason Gay was talking to Brian Curtis on the podcast and was talking along lines where the joke was, do a lot of people get mad when they're waiting in line for their vegan baked potatoes? And I can't help but think that that is a callback to our world championship reporting, little guy, when we waited in a long line. So yeah. If Jason Gay happens to be a listener of the Slow Ride Podcast, I'm blown away by this. More than likely, he's not, but he has the same sense of humor as us, because also a dad, also really into cycling, just watching from afar.
Wait, but how did this come up on the show? How did that was just sort of like it mentioned? How
you're just gonna have to listen. I'm trying to recall what it is. You know, my memory's a little bit. I was on my way to hockey, but it was along the lines of how people complain about things or leave like comment sections. And it was about like, yeah, but how are these people, what are they complaining about? Vegan baked potatoes? it was something along those lines.
Shots across the little guy's bow, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know this was like the was common.
So it's on the, I have it on our Twitter account where it's linked. You can find us at the Slow Ride Pod on Twitter and then also over at Instagram. But let's get into this week's inbox. We got a couple of emails here. The first one comes to us from Ruby Roubaix, longtime friend of the pod.
Perfect time.
Living their best life right now.
Yeah.
All over northern France, probably at Flanders. Hey, guys, don't break up the band. You've been producing top quality cycling content for years now, but honestly, I'm concerned. Uh-oh. Of course, I follow you all on Twitter, and I've noticed a real change in flavor and focus from a certain member of the trio. As Yoko was to John, please tell me the Timberwolves aren't to Super Rookie. Guys, stay strong. Don't let those wolves break up the band, Ruby. I think what Ruby is getting to is my never-ending love for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yes.
I used to count one other person on this podcast for that never-ending love that has been through over 25 years of misery. But that person has left the den and is no longer with me on this battle as the Timberwolves are experiencing their best season in recent memory. Friend of the pod, Todd Danger, a devout Portland Trail Blazers fan, has also capitulated and said the Timberwolves are on top. And it is wonderful for the first time ever to have that as well. Little guy, you left me. But the Timberwolves, while my first love, are not going to break up the podcast. It is it's a side piece. It is just taking my attention because it's once every so often they are this good. And by every so often, I mean a quarter of a century.
Yeah, every 20 years. I mean, I've been hurt by the Timberwolves many times. It was an abusive relationship for years. I had to get out of it. And now, yeah, they look good. They've been in the gym. They said they've gotten their stuff together and they're emotionally together now. And they're not going to hurt me again, but I don't believe it. And I'm not willing to, just get together and have coffee or talk or something. You know, no, thank you. Guy, yeah. I agree. They look good.
I never shared you guys' weird obsession for such a bad basketball team. I had season tickets for the Lynx and watched them win multiple championships and be a
much
dominant
team.
A much better decision. No, you were totally right. For years, being a Timberwolves fan felt like, I mean, it felt dumb, but especially when Lynx season would roll around and the Lynx would be stomping on everybody. And I'd think, why do I waste my time?
For UK corner and New Zealand corner and Aussie corner, the Lynx are the women's basketball team in Minnesota, and they are fantastic.
They're great. They've had a great dynasty. Yeah. The men's team has been pathetic for 30-some years, and the women's team has been really great for most of their existence. So, yeah.
Yeah, you could draw the comparison between a few cycling teams in that regard as well. So
you totally can. This is why cycling is better, because you don't have to pick a team. You just like a rider and wherever they go, and you change your mind halfway through the season. You like somebody else, and you have no regionally based teams. Don't make any sense. Why do I love a jersey? Whatever, doesn't matter.
Spencer, you definitely were on top with the Lynx fandom for all those years. And if anyone wants to have some fun right now, just do some side investigation of the Timberwolves ownership problems between Alex Rodriguez and Glenn Taylor. That just sums up being a Timberwolves fan.
Yeah, it's going to get better and better and better.
It's Subies. This email comes to us from friend of the pod, the Doc, Brandon. Boys, believe it or not, I listened to last week's episode while driving my wife back from the dealership after dropping off her 2017 Subaru Outback to get the head gasket replaced.
Uh-huh. What?
Imagine our surprise at hearing you guys talk about it and bring light to a common problem I was previously unaware of. I may be $4,500 poorer, but at least all my rim tape is in good shape. See you in Japan.
Gotcha.
See you in Japan.
That's too bad. Sorry to hear that. I'm glad we're bringing this to light to all our Super Driving owner friends.
I feel like as Vanagon owners, we are just enlightened by the fact that most Vanagon owners want to swap in a Subaru engine.
Yeah.
And are then painfully aware that all the old ones have this problem.
Totally.
And maybe just regular Subaru people in the cycling scene aren't so blessed I feel like we've done a great service to the community.
I had no clue that this was a problem.
Well,
so I haven't been saving up for it.
No, and I don't want to take too much glee in the pain of Subaru owners, as I will admit that I've spent a lot of the last few weeks trying to fix my silly old German car and not succeeded, as you guys both know, friend of the show, Big Matt, was over yesterday to listen to my car cough and wheeze and go, I don't know either.
Big Matt doesn't know. It's not a solvable problem.
We got some places to run, but it's not the rim tape, unfortunately, so it's not going to be an easy fix.
Rad plus pain. Hey there, Slow Ride. I was listening to last week's pod and was interested in this rad. So on my sick day, I decided to try to find the movie free on my school computer. It might be helpful to explain that I am 13 and live in South Deerfield, Massachusetts, only 26.9 miles away from Spencer. Spencer, you would know me from the Jam Fund Grand Fundo, where I gave you a Time shirt, and from Hydrocross in Holyoke. Uh-huh. Okay, back to rad. To me, it feels foreign. Made not being a man in their 40s, but also feels kind of close to me. I started BMX racing when I was about 10 years of age, and I got really good. In my first ever BMX race, I got second.
Nice.
That was crazy to me because that was my first ever real race. Now I'm older and not much wiser. Recently, I have been racing the Frozen Crit series and just started my second year of mountain bike race team training. Also, little guy, I don't care if you post my pictures or not. Thank you for making something I can listen to on the trainer, Rowan. I'm on the right of the picture next to my teammate. Amazing pain cave from Rowan here, by the way. Right. No one will ever get to see it on the old Instagram, but we've got.
I'll get it up right away.
we have a surly cross check in here. This is the best part about Rowan's photos is that they're all out of focus. This is going to match the Slow Ride podcast flavor.
That's my style.
Je sais quoi of the pod. You got a nice Orbea. This thing is looking great. Rowan. Now, Spencer, just curious, do you know Rowan? Have you met Rowan?
Oh, yeah,
recall Rowan? Okay.
Oh, we've chatted with Rowan. His dad has written in several times. We've met Rowan at Hydrocross here in Holyoke and at the Fundo, possibly some other places as well, but definitely those two.
Very cool.
Well,
the whole family.
Seeing Rad,
in the
seeing a 13-year-old watching Rad for the first time, I would love to see if it translates, because like when I was 13 and watched that movie, I felt it was like kind of cool, but now the fashion of the 80s is almost back. So, you know, like the number plates, everything. I'm curious if like, you know, Rowan's going to be taking some tips so he can be the next Crew Jones out there. It's gonna be awesome.
It doesn't quite hold up. I mean, it holds up as a retro movie. Like there's nothing weird in the movie.
Yeah,
so
I know
in
what
that
you
respect,
mean.
It's good.
Yeah. Nothing terrible.
But I think the bike tech, like BMX bicycles, haven't changed that much. But the stuff kids can do on them these days is so far ahead of where they were at that point when the movie was made. Like the freestyle tricks they're doing blew my mind when that movie was new. And nowadays, it's like, people are just doing the same kind of tricks, like just so much bigger and so much faster. And, you know, like, a backflip was like mind blowing in that movie. And now they're doing like 720, like multiple rotation, like all kinds of stuff, backflips. And, you know, it's the level is just so different. So I can imagine if that's what you're used to now, watching that movie might be like, why does anyone care about this? It's a fun look back in history, man. Like you gotta appreciate it. If nothing else, for all the mullets that are in that movie, they're incredible.
Well, that's there for me. We got a closing of a important chapter in Slow Ride Podcast email, history. Todd, you just read right back to us. This is, of course, our Southeast Southwest Iowa correspondent about the Rock Lobster, obviously thanking all of the great feedback that everyone had, fellow Hawkeye listener comments on Minnesota. But I must admit, Spencer is right. I'm already considering putting down a payment on a second frame from Rock Lobster, though it would be a steel Monster Cross frame. I do occasionally race single speed cross, so the SRAM Axis suggestion also got my gears turning. With all the accent color discussion, he's hoping to throw on Checkerboard on there as a lifelong fan of ska and pop punk to see if maybe he can pull that off. He also drives a Nissan Juke, which would only make more sense. By the way, probably an underrated cycling car, the Nissan Juke, the square body. It's not an XB. It's not a Scion XB, but the Juke.
The Juke's the square one? Yeah.
I don't know what exact listener category I fall into, but I feel like I'm somewhere in the slow ride demographic. Yes, you are.
Yes.
Pretty much sum it up right there, Todd. Thank you for the email. Can't wait to see some of the pictures not make it to the Instagram feed from the little guy.
We love our Subaru drivers on this podcast, but we also love our Juke drivers.
Yeah,
welcome to the family.
The Juke is the one that looks like an Aztec and a Mini had a baby. Like, it's got two sets of eyeballs on the front. It kind of looks like a lobster. Like, look at the front of a Nissan Juke. It looks a little bit like a lobster. I see a theme in your life.
Todd? Custom license plate? Rock?
The lobster.
Lobster
man? Yeah. Todd, I really like the idea of the Juke because I kind of find it hideous, but I think it's so hideous I like it. It's come all the way around. Like, every time I see it, I go, ugh, and then I go, bold choice. And I'm like, I want to give that person it's weird.
It's definitely a step up on the Hyundai Santa Cruz.
Ugliest car in the
here
world.
Here we are. For a topic that Todd's also going to love, this next email comes to us from Chris, the only cycling podcast with taste in music. Hey guys, I've listened to the Pixies for most of my adult life, and Surfa Rosa is one of my favorite records. But did you know that the song Tony's Theme is a song about a superhero who rides a bike? Look up the lyrics. They're rad. Joey the guitarist, also an avid cyclist, which got me thinking. What is the ultimate playlist about cycling or songs that make you think about riding or racing a bike? Keep in mind, if I wanted a lame playlist, I would just search a streaming service for public playlists that include the word bike, but that's not why you're here. Let's go for the deep cuts for all the cool kids should be playing on their Wahoo computers. Besides the Pixies, we've got Kraftwerk, Tour de France, Descendants, Bikage, which is what I'm going to see the Descendants tonight. So the Bikage is on there. The Smiths, Charming Man, Explosive, Hit the Brakes, and Tom Waits' Broken Bicycles. Let's discuss on the pod.
I was just going to interrupt you, Tim, and say if one of the three of us mentions Kraftwerk Tour de France, I'm quitting the podcast. And
yes.
Why? Just because
it was on the list. No, but that was on the list from Chris. It's not our list. So the first one, Spencer, I want to give you the respect that I don't think you ever fully got in the 10 years that this podcast has gone on and the 20 years since you made it. For years, or for the first 6 months we raced at the Velodrome in Minnesota. Sorry, first 6 weeks we raced at the Velodrome in Minnesota. It was the same horrible playlist that they had for the years that we went up there to go watch. The first day I ever met Little Guy was at a race at the Velodrome. We were in the crowd, and we were like blown away with how horrible the music was. And Spencer, took it upon yourself to come up with a playlist. Uh-huh. And it was the Thursday night playlist of dreams. And the first race would start, and it was Ace of Spades by Motorhead with the amazing guitar riff. And I recall even one of our favorite racers there, old Twiddles, who would sit on the trainer twiddling his thumbs. When that guitar riff came on, he was like, Motorhead, like, was so into it. So you created a playlist, and it started with Motorhead, Ace of Spades. And then it went immediately into Jawbreaker, Bad Scene, Everyone's Fault, where there's a Bicycle Messenger reference. Mm-hmm. And then you had some other jams on there. whenever I hear of the Motorhead, Ace of Spades, and then the Jawbreaker, Bad Scene, Everyone's Fault, I instantly think of that playlist and also Racing Bicycles. So thank you for that.
That's true. Yeah. Those songs are so tied to being at the Velodrome to me. You're right. That anything on that playlist comes on at this point, and I'm just like, I'm at the track. I'm like, I got to switch my gears. Oh my God. When am I up?
Yeah.
I got to warm up.
It's pretty funny that you reference those, Tim, with the term playlist, because I definitely burnt a CD for that. That was a different time, a different era, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
When he mentions bicycle songs, I mean, obviously, Bicycle by Queen pops into my head. There's Bike by Pink Floyd, keeping it British, and that period. And I also just, not songs, because I just thought of Jay Maskus, because I've seen things where Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr. Seems to be a guy who's into biking, though nothing about Dinosaur Jr. songs would necessarily make you think of biking, except for the fact that, similar to what Tim said, Matt Anderson, who was one of the head officials here in Minnesota for years at many cyclocross races, he seemed to be both head official and head of playlist. Mm-hmm. And he would put on Dinosaur Jr. pretty commonly, before teams were doing more of a, like, having a theme for races or trying to putting on more of it. Like, races were pretty low key, and maybe just the official would just turn on some tunes and in their Jeep. And so we had a lot of Dinosaur Jr. for a while, which I appreciated, but it's not exactly like get you pumped up racing. I don't know.
No,
it's a good solo.
Greater cycling scene. That's pretty specific too.
But I think, but those two Jay Maskus facts make me think, and he probably lives pretty close to you, Spencer, so you might see him.
The only other one that when I inherently think of bike is, you guys may know this, but back in the late 90s, early 2000s, DJ Itch over here was really into independent hip hop, just really crushing souls on the ones and twos. There was this avant-garde hip hop group called Cloud Dead that had a song about called Bike. It was awesome. Probably my favorite. But it's definitely not something you want to listen to on the trainer, because it'll probably put you to sleep. But I think what we should do is that the three of us should come up with our own actual playlist and create one, and then we can share it. But Spencer, you had an amazing burned CD. Can we find that burned CD in the track list? You've got to have it on hard drive somewhere, on an old iMac somewhere, because that playlist... The last time I went to the Velodrome about 6-7 years ago, I went up there on a Thursday night. They were still playing it.
Yeah. Oh, it was still
being
played.
And it was like 14 years in.
Yeah.
Like, now no one else had ever created another one, but it was definitely dated. Do you recall any of the other songs that were on that, Spencer? Because that to me is riding bikes, and that was an amazing playlist. You could talk over it at times. It was fantastic.
Honestly, I don't recall any of the other songs that were on it. I would have to have a think about it.
Did you put Merle Haggard on there, or did somebody else? Was that the separate CD that was played?
There was
a Merle Haggard song that was on one of them.
It could have been.
That was always during the missing out.
So I was trying to toe this line between slowly. Cool songs and like songs that were not going to offend Bob. the Velodrome director.
We had to make sure there was no swearing on any of them. It was good.
But for this current playlist that we're talking about, my instant suggestions would be two tracks from John Farnham, famous, maybe what ties better to cycling than the movie Rad itself is from the soundtrack, the two kind of main tracks from Rad. Thunder in Your Heart and Break the Ice, both loose cycling references in there, but like in the context of the movie are absolute bangers and very 80s kind of pop rock, little like think Bon Jovi, you know, kind of a vibe to it, but just they carry to this day and really will pump you up for racing.
We definitely need a David Byrne song on here, because David Byrne is probably the most popular cyclist in America right now, I'm assuming. because probably. David Byrne rides his bike to the Met Gala every year, is seen in Manhattan. I think if we didn't mention David Byrne or any of his songs, now you can either go Psycho Killer or you can go like Burning Down the House,
Got Road a lot to of Nowhere. Options.
There's so many great options.
I mean, maybe Road to Nowhere. I think you could try to stretch that into a bicycle reference, but you just
I don't think you need to have songs that are about bikes as much as you got to have the artist that's about bikes or something that recalls. So that's why I think we can get this because if you, there's so many good ones out there that I think we can take this on, but David Byrne's definitely going to be on there from me. And then, so what are some of the other songs that you can start to coalesce around there? I've got to think about it. I always, what's the Ride and Dirty song that came out? And remember how after Floyd Landis got popped, there was like the song that like someone had almost like a Weird Al riff on it. Is that Chamillionaire, the Ride and Dirty song? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they see me hating, they see me rolling. Yeah, it's pretty much riding bikes right there. That'd definitely be on there for me.
Yeah, I gotta think Team Astana probably has a few bangers that they've put out over the years on this playlist.
Oh man, the CDRs in that Vino has like piled up in the Astana bus, like from back in the day. Like when he wants to get the guys pumped, he's like, "You guys, I'm gonna put on this disc from 2005. This is what I would listen to when I took my dad's blood."
Oh.
Pre-race.
You know what you absolutely need to have on a cycling playlist is Tom Boonen. Famously. Oh.
Yes, that's true.
How we named little guy's offspring, first name Tom Boonen, middle name Tom Boonen.
Yeah.
From the song Tom Boonen, which is an absolute incredible banger.
There's a banger. There's some of those. Now, there's some pretty good end of season cyclocross rap battles out there that I don't know where we would get the tracks from, but I think we got some Kevin Pauls throwing down some rhymes. I'm using air quotes when I say rhymes.
So there's another one that's going to be on the list for me, and that's going to be Mojo Style. Do you remember this video from about 12 years ago that AG2R did? And it was like dance. It's a French pop song. I will put that also on the playlist. It's a classic. It was when AG2R was cool 12 years ago, wearing brown bibs. You got a young, you got a young Romain Bardet in it, in the swimming pool. Fantastic stuff. That will also be on there. I absolutely love this question. So it's a challenge accepted. I think we'll be able to put something together. But Chris, thank you so much for emailing on music tips. And you've come to the right spot. I mean, just three hip dudes talking about music. Can't think
of
anything
cool,
better.
Very cool, hip and with it dudes.
None of our references will be dated at all.
And now let's go into the next one. Classified Corner, help me sell my Mercs, please. Dear Slow Ride Pod, longtime viewer, second time caller. I was very excited to hear on the last episode that you might help your listeners sell their bikes. I have a 1989 Eddie Merckx 711 that, although I love, does not quite fit me. It was a winter build. I needed something to do during the long, dark Colorado winters and a bike that I always wanted. I'm a huge fan of steel frames with carbon rims, which is why I got to build with this bike. It is well used, but it rides oh so smooth. I would like this bike to go to someone who will love it as much as me. Now, it's a Craigslist ad, and it says, "Josh, in the sunny city, beautiful Colorado Springs, P.S. still can't seem to find episode 400 with the interview of George Hincappy. It's there, Josh. You just got to look a little bit more." Now, Spencer and Little Guy, I'm going to put in the chat the Craigslist link. Now, the first thing that you will see on this bike, it is absolutely beautiful. Eddie Merckx 711, resplendent matching bar tape, the high gloss bar tape, good angle on the hoods, quill stem. This thing is wonderful. $1,500. So my first thing of advice would be it's too much.
Really?
No, not at all.
Wow, market, I think it's a smoking
deal.
eBay,
it's a smoking deal.
My immediate reaction was, this is a bargain.
I It's an absolute. You're right. It's a bargain. It looks.
Oh, weird! Awesome. It's my
57.
Size.
Uh-oh. It's your size. Yep. It's got the red look pedals on there. Little guy, it's got down tube shifters for you. Now it's a little bit too big for you, but you're a fan of the down
too
tube.
Big. Shift.
This bike is absolutely beautiful. $1,500, banging deal. Spencer, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking I would be in great trouble if I did this. I have 14 bikes in the basement. I do not need another one. But this is an absolute steal. It looks amazing. I love
Columbus
the wheels.
Tubing.
The steel frames with the carbon wheels, I am on board. I think this is a great era for cycling, maybe the best era.
Mm-hmm.
What a absolutely banging bike. And I fall firmly in the camp of this was a dream bike that I always wanted as well. So it makes it really tough. Actually, this is I'm having a crisis right here live on air.
So Josh writes the following, and I will say this, the pictures used by Josh, I can't critique too much more. Classic bike against the wall, against the garage, but then also pre-carbon rims, the bike up against the mountains outside in the wild, making you think that you can go out and ride this bike. Friends, I have a 1989 Eddie Merckx Corsa Extra in 711 colors. I rebuilt this bike from the frame up with period-ish correct components, with the exception of the carbon tubular wheels, little guy. It's going for your heart.
I love them. Make it as complicated as possible.
While this is a gorgeous bike and I love the aesthetic, I just don't ride it much, and I would prefer to see it go to someone who would appreciate it. This thing is awesome. I'm actually talking myself into this. This frame rides super smooth because it's steel. I never understood why people don't like steel frames, but I get it now. This frame looks super nice from arm's length, but has many blemishes up close. Ooh, Josh, tip, don't say that. This would be a great bike for anyone familiar with the 711 team or anyone wanting to stand out in a group ride. The bike has a super smooth ride and smooth shifters. Also included a spare clincher wheel set and spare parts. I cannot see any blemishes on the initial included pictures.
You know, you're right, Tim. You probably shouldn't write that because you let people figure it yourself. I'm actually kind of excited for that, though, in a way, because I've owned a few bikes that have been too nice. You guys know most of my stuff is falling apart and has holes in it, and I'm comfortable here in this place. Mm-hmm. And when I've gotten bikes in the past that are really nice, they end up just sitting in the corner because I'm constantly afraid that I'm going to put that first scratch on them. Whereas I've bought some pretty beat up, like nicer bikes, but that they've been beat up. And then I just ride the hell out of it. And then I think back on it and I think that was one of my favorite bikes because I wasn't afraid of scratching it, you know? So
I think the update of the carbon I'm with you, Spencer. The update is fantastic. And Spencer, or little guy, the only blemish I see is the Y on Eddie Merckx in the Eddie. Everything else, I think, is just looking good. That 711 colorway, by the way, underrated. It's like a fantastic, man. Steel bike. This thing is
really
great.
Good. I don't need this bike, but I do want some early carbon wheels. So I'm going to look for some lightweight wheels on
Tim,
eBay.
Remind me again, what was the question here? We need to help him sell this. I think he's doing a great job.
We're giving him a free ad.
It's price to move.
The ride's oh so smooth.
Yeah, if you jump over to Colorado Springs Craigslist and search Eddie Merckx, I'm sure you will find this thing.
I'll put the link on our Twitter account because
he'll probably be willing to accommodate some fans of the pod if it needs to be shipped anywhere. But this is a slamming deal. I will be jealous if you get this bike.
I'm going to put it on the Twitter account right now. This bike is awesome, and you should buy it before Pro's Closet undercuts
you should
price.
Buy it you should buy it before Tim buys it, because we know it'll just sit in a box in his garage for multiple years, and it deserves a better fate than that.
That's a good point. Don't let it go to Tim.
Buy it before Tim buys it and it sits in the garage untouched. Well, thank you, Josh, for sending over that bike. Link is on the Twitter. Go check it out. Someone should buy it. Josh, hook him up with some shipping deal. Then you get that thing moved because it's going to look awesome.
Yeah, I do like this. I really do like this carbon wheel on a steel bike, because you get the look of being a team leader in 1995.
Yeah.
Like, you still had to ride the same steel bike everyone's on, but you're on the program, and so you're also on the program where you order the lightweight wheels, you know, like, and so, like,
yeah, team those early times. Yeah, afford one set.
Right? And, like, even, like, Lance era, Ulrich, right? They hit to the mountains, and suddenly the lightweight wheels come out, Ulrich's on better stuff than the rest of the team, and I miss that era. I miss that. This is some, everything's custom. Like, they can't do it anymore because of UCI rules in the same way, but
I do think where Josh is winning here is when he mentions that you would stick out on a group ride. Like, this is the ultimate group ride bike, right? Oh, like, yeah. You show up to the group ride, you are not going to win, but if you did on this bike, like, everyone would be like, damn, down tube.
Oh, no.
Things fantastic.
If you show up to a group ride on this bike, you already won. Like, there's no more competition. Everyone else lost.
What would you change about the bike? Would either of you change anything? Components?
I would. Personally, I need to change the pedals. They're going to be Time RXS pedals. Yeah.
White housing looks great. I don't like the saddle. I'm not a Sella. What is that? A Sella Royal? I'm a
yeah
area.
I like the way those look, but yeah, that's just a sitting on it thing. Looking at it, I like it, but you're right. It wouldn't be what I could see.
You put a turbo on that. Definitely. I get that. Little guy would put a turbo on that for sure.
No, I can't send a turbo's the same way, man. I love looking at a turbo on a classic bike, but I can't even ride to the store on a turbo. I just, like, five blocks too much for one of those. I've tried, man.
Are the turbos your least favorite saddle, little guy?
No, I wouldn't say I don't know what my least favorite saddle is, but you know, when it works, and when it doesn't work.
After five blocks, you'd be like, I can't do that anymore?
I had, for a while, there was a point where, like, I just had a turbo sitting around and I didn't like it very much. I kept trying on bikes. I put on my track bike because I was like, I'm uncomfortable anyway. It'll be fine. But I don't think that really made sense. That didn't work out. But it was just what I had. And I don't know. Yeah, it just wasn't.
On the track, you only use, like, the first 4 millimeters of the saddle anyway.
Yeah, you're right. That was kind of what I was thinking. Like, I'm barely touching this thing. Maybe it'll be okay. And I'm already. But no, it doesn't work for me. I need something flatter, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would change on this bike actually is the handlebars. Like, for me, even on a vintage bike, the round handlebars I can't do. I gotta get the little ergo shape bars, but I'd still get old, like, aluminum ones or whatever. But
yeah, well, I know what you mean. I think the same way. The round looks better, but
they look better.
At the end of the day, when I get the drops, I want. I forget. There's a 3T bar. I forget what model it is from, like, the 90s. That is, like, my jam. But
Yes. Well, gentlemen, it's been another wonderful episode 478 here. We are coming around the corner. Episode 500 is coming. Now, we have about 20 shout outs that I still have in my inbox for episode 400. We should probably figure out what we're going to do with that and get that one wrapped up at some point. But, you know, overall, it was another fantastic episode. I know Tour of Flanders was a 9 and a 9.5 on the men's and women's scale, respectively. I would rate this a 10 out of 10. Once again, we slate it. We will work hard on coming up with a playlist. Maybe we'll put that in the Slow Ride Podcast zine that is underway currently.
And, yeah, is the zine going to come out before the jerseys get dropped? Or before, after episode 400? Well, when are we doing? And I don't have the order down for our projects.
Which one of Tim's ideas comes first here?
There's a lot of projects here. Still got to get incorporated. Now, we are going to get probably incorporated here in Florida.
Okay. I mean, I'm still working on my board game.
We're all good state for business. here we are. We're crushing it. Little guy is also actively working on a radio play. Stoked about that. Spencer has a new
website
irons
in the
works.
Fire. Yep.
There's a lot of things going on. And let's not forget the Slow Ride Podcast travel business that we're working on, because we're going to do our first ever ride on the Natchez Trace National Parkway in Mississippi. Yep. Can't wait for that. It would be fantastic. Maybe special guest Spencer will come by for a day or so.
We've got the world tour of live shows we're going to do as well.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Lots of irons in the fire for America's number one cycling podcast. And with that, we'd like to thank all the listeners and supporters of the Wide Angle Podium Network. You can also find us on the Slow Ride Pod at Twitter and Instagram. And please email us at theslowridepod@gmail.com, where all of your emails are gratefully received. It's great content. We love it. Give us your suggestions for what's on the playlist, and we'll continue to get this put together. And with that, this is Tim in the one and only City Beautiful, Orlando, Florida.
This is Matt, still in Minneapolis, still wearing shoes in the house.
And this is Spencer in the original City Beautiful, Holyoke, Massachusetts, reminding you to always wave at all your fellow cyclists that you see out on the road.
The Slow Ride Podcast. Bikes, advice, and rumors straight from the source. TheSlowRidePodcast.com and on Twitter at TheSlowRidePod.
There's an elegance to bike racing. For all its technology and engineering, it's a simple question of physics. How do you move a body through space as quickly and efficiently as possible? When the rider and the machine work as one, it's almost as if the solid world has melted away, and all that remains is the spirit, the pure, raw, and unfiltered soul of sport. Life is measured in many units, miles, kilometers, kilos, and pounds. But we measure it one corner at a time. We've entered the golden age of crit racing, the most exciting spectator event in sport, where all of human drama plays out before us on our city streets. On this show, we bring you the news of the day and take you inside the personalities of the teams and riders and right up to the gates of the premier events in the world. Welcome to Criterium Nation.